welcome to Yada Yada Radio and to our Shavuot program. JB is in his sick bed today, so it appears that we are a twosome. How are you, Bubba J?
I'm doing fine. Trying to get over this hangover, you know.
Too many beers, huh, Bubba J?
Yeah, that's
for those who are wondering why the Bubba J reference earlier this week on Shattering Myths, Larry called in as a dropout from the first grade that wanted to complain about the educational system in the country. So I decided that I would greet him as Bubba J, and he played along.
I thought you did a pretty good job there, too. I you know, for a moment there, I had your call screener going, you know.
Aaron's a pretty good guy, and he actually likes the whole thing. In fact, I even asked him. I said, "Do you think Larry's up for me yanking his chain pretty good here?" And he says, "Oh yeah, I think he'll do just fine." So it was.
I yanked his pretty hard, you know. I called him talking about semantics and so forth, and how I didn't fail. I was held back, you know.
Hey, in fact, today, those of you who were talking about semantics, those of you who listen to the archives as opposed to the show live, missed an actual episode of the N word being broadcast, and I had to tell Aaron to go back and change it. IQ's diction is so eloquent that he actually used the N-word. He actually used it in the appropriate context, in the appropriate way. But he says, you know, people getting offended for hearing the N-word and then or being called by the actual racial term for the N-word. And he just was brilliant in the way he said it, so he actually got by with it. But I did have Aaron go back and remove it so that we wouldn't be banned from from the airways.
Well, that'd be a good plan.
Yeah, it was a it was an interesting week. As I read the news, of course, there's now scores of people who are being killed in the eastern part of Ukraine. We've goaded the Ukrainians in Kiev and using the military against civilian protesters. We are having a conniption fit on people wanting to choose their own allegiances because America thinks that it ought to be able to dictate whatever it wants upon the rest of the world. And yet we certainly seem to have Putin painted into a corner where the only thing that he's going to be able to do is defend his citizens and invade the Ukraine to bring peace to the mess that we Americans created. I just hope that that's where it ends and that all we do after that is rhetoric, because if we continue to impose sanctions, if we continue to paint him in a corner, if we continue to maneuver NATO, we're going to have a world war before the NATO, the Magog War, and that's not going to be a good thing.
Well, there's definitely going to be wars, rumors of wars, but I don't think there'll be a world war until that time. But you know,
that's what I had always thought. I had thought that the next war was World War III, was the Magog War. I'm still clinging to that hope, but there is absolutely nothing that would preclude another world war, because he said there'll be war and rumors of war. And while World War II was a world war, and there have been lots of rumors of wars and wars since that time, there would be absolutely nothing to preclude another war, as that and have nothing to be inconsistent with the scriptural witness. And there is no reason that Yahweh would delineate, tell us anything about that war. Because God only has one interest, Israel. And so if Russia and the United States were to go off and beat each other to a pulp, God really doesn't care.
Right. I just don't think it'll be nuclear. There's sure going to be bloody war. I mean, I think there's a lot of things, and as you point out, the man of Torahlessness will no doubt launch himself in there using economic means, but there's a lot of economic components to any war.
Yeah, but even then, Larry, the more I study Yahweh's prophecy and then study the perpetrators of what he said was going to happen, the more I realize that, yeah, God mentioned that there's going to be an economic component. But it's kind of like in passing, so what? Yeah, he mentioned that that where he's going to come from, but it's in passing. It's kind of like, so what? What does God care about? He cares about Yisrael. He cares about Israelites. He cares about Yehudim. He cares about his covenant. He cares about his Torah. He cares about his children. And
right,
so
he's not involved in the minutiae, and I agree with that.
He doesn't give a hoot about the minutiae. When the beast contradicts his meeting times, he cares. When the beast contradicts his Shabbat, he cares. When the beast, and by the way, the beast is not only the Torahless one who's doing this. Of course, the Roman Catholic Church and Eastern Orthodox churches have done the same thing. And Rome did the same thing. When Rome fought against Israel in the second Roman-Judean war, Hadrian banned all things that are dear to Yahweh. He made the Torah illegal. He found every copy he could find and burned them. Owning a copy of the Torah was illegal anywhere in the Roman Empire. He banned...
I did not know that. Just
he
flat out.
Flat out banned it. An illegal book. Then he said that Judaism was illegal. Now, that doesn't bother me. He said being circumcised was illegal. That made it impossible to be part of the covenant. He killed every Hebrew scholar, burned every Hebrew book. He went to war. I mean, what's really interesting, and one of the things that maybe this is a spoiler and I shouldn't do this, but I found it really interesting that the Jews, even to this day, believe that Hadrian was accommodating them after the first Roman-Judean war, when Jerusalem was sacked, when thousands upon thousands of Jews were crucified, and when, you know, the plunder from the temple was used to build the Colosseum in Rome, where you couldn't have had a greater contrast between two buildings. There's never been a greater contrast between two buildings, the epitome of evil and the epitome of good. And so the Jews, who were not all killed in the first Judean revolt, thought that Hadrian was being kind to them when he told them, hey, you know, you all come back to Jerusalem now, and, you know, I'm going to even allow you to rebuild your temple. He was playing them. Jews are really hard to kill when they're scattered all over the world. He baited them to come back to Israel, and Jews are saying, oh, but he was so accommodating initially. And then he changed his mind for reasons we don't know and decided that rather than the temple to Hashem, he wanted to build a temple to Jupiter and put a big statue of himself there. The whole thing was staged. They were played. And so once they all came back to Jerusalem and were all there ready to build their temple, he announced, oh, now we're going to turn this city into Alia Capitolina, which means a shrine to Hadrian. And we're going to just mass pagan shrines all over the place. It's going to be a vacation retreat for legionnaires. And he baited the Jews into war so he could annihilate them. And at the end of that war, he brought in a dozen legions. And every single Jew who had taken his bait and come back to Israel was either savagely killed, they were enslaved and dispersed in the slave markets around the world. And every community, every town, every village was razed to the ground. That's when he declared everything associated with Yahweh and his Torah were illegal. The Shabbat was illegal. The meeting times were illegal. Yahweh's calendar was made illegal. The Torah was made illegal. Hebrew was illegal. All of it. That was Hadrian.
Wow. Wow, and yet UNESCO, you know, the educational fund there from the United Nations, They have Hadrian's Wall as a, you know, a sort of a...
Well, that's up there in Britain.
Yeah, up there in Northern England. They've made that one of their educational, you know, facilities, something that they hold up as something great.
You know that the Rome's last conquest of land occurred exactly between the two their two battles against Yehuda. And then from that point on, every battle that Rome fought was to survive, to defend itself. It never fought another battle for conquest. And from that moment on, Rome began to die. Never, ever, ever fought another battle prevailing for land. In fact, it didn't even fight a battle trying to gain land from that point on. It fought every battle just to survive. And the next, very next battle Rome fought was in Italy, where the Germanic tribes were on the rampage because they had been freed because Hadrian brought every legion, most of the legions actually from the Balkans, into to obliterate Jews. And so they were released. It is... It has been, I'll tell you, going through the history of Rome, you can see why Paul's letters were resonated with people. The Jews and the Romans were brought up in a culture where Jews were demonized. They were brought up in a culture where it was illegal. Paul didn't have to, Paul's animosity toward the Torah preceded Hadrian's making it illegal by, you know, Paul wrote his letter nullifying the Torah in 51 CE, and then of course Vespasian and Trajan destroyed the temple and Jerusalem in between 68 and 70 CE, but Hadrian came back to complete the job, to obliterate the entire province of Yehuda, to wipe it off the face of the map, even renamed it, of course, as you know.
Named it after the Philistines, between an ancient nemesis.
Right.
Sure.
Between 133 and 135 CE. So, really, fourscore and 4 years after Paul wrote his first letter demeaning the Torah, Hadrian made it illegal. So they were working in conjunction with one another, and that's why it is so important to recognize that Paul was a Roman.
Yeah,
when God tells us that that out of Rome came the worst beast the world would ever know, he's speaking of Pauline doctrine. It's manifest as Roman Catholic Church and Orthodox Christianity.
You know, basically what they've done is learned Yahweh's name, and they try to, you know, read religious material and just replace Yahweh's name every time they see Lord. Yeah, every time they see Lord, try to replace it with Yahweh's name and still think they have something that's remotely accurate. And it's so sad because they hang on to those exact same canons.
And it's a big advantage to have already written Questioning Paul, but once you have come to know Paul's ploy, and then you read the history of Rome and its battles, and then you study Yahweh's prophecy of what the beast is going to be like and from where he will emerge, he is identical to Paul. They are absolutely identical. There is not a single minute disparity between them. That's going to make him awfully seductive for Christians, isn't it?
Yeah, it, you know, it's, what's amazing to me, like I say, is that people really want to hang on to him. Even people that claim they're moving into the Torah, they want to hang on to Paul. And frankly, they can't do that. It can't be done. It cannot be done. You can't embrace the enemies of the family and be family. You just can't do it, you know.
I had those 12 conundrums for Christians that I did on for 2 hours in Shattering Myths today, where, you know, I understand that you believe, you know, that God died for your sins, for example, but that is not possible. And we did the 12 conundrums that are the most debilitating to Christianity today on that on the show, and they were all set up to demonstrate that whether or not you are receptive to the truth, if you are told that the name of your religion is a lie, if you're told that the name of the founder, the supposed founder of your religion is a lie, if you're told that the basis of your religion is a lie, if you're told that your religion's animosity to God's testimony is a lie, if every aspect of your religion is a lie, and you're shown that it's a lie, and you are still willing to cling to it, then there is no hope for you. There's no words, no testimony, no book, no individual that can make a difference. And that's to a large degree the problem with the Hebrew Roots movement. They've embraced two lies and cling to both of them.
Yeah,
no place to insert evidence or reason.
Well, the minute you bring religion into the mix, you're finished. You know, a little bit of leaven, you know.
It goes a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, but you know, that's actually Paul's line. Both of us.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
I a little bit use of that, but
yeah,
the,
yeah, yeah. Actually,
the point
Paul
being,
write it as a little bit of leaven, you know, I leavens the entire loaf. He forgot the verb. It's written, you know, like you just throw words up against the wall, but that's,
yeah, well, you
it
know,
is,
but
it is,
still,
it
you bring a little
out,
bit of religion.
It's smoothed out to say that. No, it's actually, that's a Pauline line. It's Yosha that defined leaven, actually yeast, as the substance of liberal politicians and conservative religious advocates. He defined it for his disciples. Well, I do want to pick up, Larry, where we were on the 119th Psalm. We were beginning the letter chat. The letter chat.
Sadly, I can't even pull it up because the website's just spinning. I don't know why. I don't know if anybody else is having that problem, but I'll chime in when need be, but I can't read
okay.
it along.
Let me just see. Intro. Let's see if you're the only one that's getting a spinning. No, I'm able to get it. That does not mean that everybody can get it, but volume part 3. Let's see if that's coming up. It's a little slow to bring up part 3 of Introduction to God on the so. Yeah, I'm not getting much in the way of text. The wheels are just spinning along. We'll see if that changes.
That's what I'm talking. I can get to introtogod.org, no doubt about that. But if I get to part 3, it's been spinning for 20 minutes here, so I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to open.
Did you try the, it just solved that problem? Just click on the download PDF.
Download PDF?
Yeah, see at the top of the page? Download the PDF or click on Microsoft Word DocX.
Okay, I got it.
All right.
Just did download
right.
PDF.
That yeah, you just got to be a little smarter than Bubba J sometimes.
Well, you know, you know, when it comes to technology, I can promise you I'm not smarter than Bubba J. You know,
I probably are smarter than Bubba J because Bubba J is a ventriloquist dummy. All right, so 57, chat. Chat is drawn like a wall. It speaks of separating and protecting. What do walls do? They separate, they protect. So,
and they divide.
As we, yeah, they by separating, they divide. And that's what, but they also protect us. You know, they can, a wall for a city, for example, would protect you. Your, the walls around your home, protect you. But they also separate your home from the outside world. So that's the letter, Chet. Of course, the first word of the, of this refrain begins with a Chet. It's, Chelek. It's, allot me a share by way of an inheritance. Chelek, Yahweh. I have promised without reservation to observe, to consider, to focus on, and to explore, Lashamar, your word. Now, the last stanza was an ode to the Torah. Torah was described as the source for all of this. And he's continuing on his God's word and his Torah, from Dode's perspective, and should be from ours, are equivalent. And the reason that Chelek is important is because the word that Yahusha is translated using in his instruction on the mount to tell us that his Torah is not being annulled by him, but instead being fulfilled by him, and to tell us that not a single word in our letter, not even the smallest letter or part of a letter of the Torah, is going to be annulled or done away with until the, so long as the heavens and earth exist. The word that he is translated using is nomos. Nomos is an allotment that comes by way of an inheritance. Therefore, nomos is, conveys exactly what chelek is conveying relative to Yahweh's Torah and word. The purpose of Yahweh's Torah is because he, God, has a gift that he wants to give us. And because he's in the role of father and we're in this role of children, the gift he wants to give us is an inheritance. Now, this is why, you know, Abraham had so much trouble with this. We have a huge advantage over Abraham. And a lot of people say, God, wouldn't it be great to be Abraham when you're meeting directly with God? You're singing with him and breaking bread with him and taking walks with him. Wouldn't that just be great? Well, why is it any better than what we're doing? I'm singing with him. I'm taking walks with him. I'm listening to him. I'm chatting with him. I'm partying with him. And I have a huge advantage. I can see the whole story. And I can see the whole story unfold. But Abraham couldn't. And so he was caught in the mundane, as we humans have a tendency to be. I mean, you know, so many humans pray to God for mundane things. God's not caught up in the mundane. That's why I said he really doesn't care that the Torahless one is going to deploy an economic scheme. It's immaterial to him. God cares about giving an inheritance to his children by way of the covenant. That's what he cares about. And so Abraham couldn't figure it out. He says, okay, come on, God. Why did you have me leave Babylon, traipse all the way, you know, halfway across the known world, and come here, and you keep on meeting with me, and you give me these, you know, these big pep talks about this wonderful inheritance you're giving me, and I'm an old fart, and I don't even have a kid. What good is an inheritance? I couldn't spend the money if you gave it to me, so that doesn't do me any good, and I don't have a kid to pass it on to. You know, what are you talking about, inheritance? And, Larry, I think you know what God did.
Yeah, he set him down and...
No, he didn't set him down. No, he didn't set him down, didn't he? Not at that moment. He did after that. Right after that. What's the first thing he did? He showed him what the inheritance was all about.
Well, yeah, yeah.
He took him to heaven. He showed him the light of the stars. And he says,
yeah,
this is
so
what you're inheriting. You're going to become like this. This is what you're inheriting. And then Abraham says, oh, boy, I get it. And then, of course, they sat down and they had a feast together. And the feast symbolizes the means that we receive this same inheritance through the seven annual feasts of Yahweh. But all God really is interested in is providing us with an inheritance. We inherit the covenant's promises. We inherit, therefore, Yahweh's light, making us perfect and immortal. We are adopted into his family, making us heirs. He enriches us with everything he has to give. That's the, you know, the marvelous inheritance. He transforms us into light. That's what we inherit. So inherit is a really, really important term. Almost every time it appears in its various words, and there's probably 8 or 9 Hebrew words for inheritance. Just imagine, we have 1 in English, there's 8 or 9 in Hebrew. And every time that the word appears in the Hebrew text, it's almost always translated possess or occupy. You know, like they're going to go in and they're going to possess the land. They're going to go in and occupy the land. So now it becomes the occupied land. And that's not what God's saying. You're going to go in and you're going to inherit the land. Because what does the land represent? It represents living with God. It represents living with God.
You don't exactly occupy what you own. You know,
it's living with God in the here and now, and living with God forever in his home is what we're inheriting. Inheritance is as important a concept as there is for us in the totality of God's message. So this begins, allot me a share by way of an inheritance, Yahweh. I have promised without reservation to observe, to consider, to focus on, and to explore your word. Now, the second part of this is as important as the first part. Dode has come to realize, he's come to understand. I want to use understand because that's where power is in our world. He came to understand what the Torah was all about. It's an inheritance. Yahweh is Father giving his children all that he has, sharing with his children all that he has. It's an inheritance. And Dode recognizes that the inheritance isn't given to everyone. That to receive the inheritance, there is something you have to do. And, you know, so all of our Hebrew roots friends that are so fixated on doing what the Torah says recognize there are some do's. And one of the do's is observe. It's probably the most important do there is. Observe. It says, I have promised without reservation to observe, to consider, to focus on, and to explore, La Shamar, your word, Dabar. That's how we come to a position where we know, understand, accept, and therefore can respond appropriately to God and receive this inheritance. So he put it together. By the way, this is one of the things that's really interesting about the timeline of Rome that is consistent with something, affirms something we just talked about. When Yahweh allowed the Romans in 70 CE, he didn't help them, he didn't encourage them, but he didn't stop them, and he's God, he could have, but he didn't. When he allowed the Romans to destroy his temple, that should have ended the argument that rages today between us and those who take a different view of the word observe, the Torah. The moment the temple was destroyed, all of the instructions that exist in the Torah, and there are lots of them, as to what we are supposed to do with respect to the temple,
can no longer be done any longer. Yeah, they could not. It's just like the tithe in the storehouse. I mean, it can't be done.
It can't be done anymore. Yeah. And since they can't be done anymore, it would be a cruel hoax for Yahweh to say, unless you do everything that I say, unless you obey every rule here, that you're not going to be saved. God would be sadistic because an enormous number of the instructions cannot be followed today. We're not talking about, you know, attitude or obedience. It's flat out impossible. And when that occurred, it should have ended the debate. Because while there are huge swaths of things we cannot do, there is nothing that we can't learn from.
Right. I laid that same point down to this group of the 10 people that meet that listen to Shattering Myths and have a problem with the G word. I said, how do you tithe? How do you do it? There's no storehouse. Are you a farmer? I mean, how do you do it?
Yeah, you can't get money, by the way, either.
You've got to,
give, you got to leave 10% of your field, uncultivated. It's pretty hard to do if you're not a, a farmer. You got to bring in wood. Where are you going to bring the wood? You got to bring in wool. Where are you going to bring in the wool?
Yeah, you know, I laid that out to him. I said, how is this possible?
Yeah.
You know,
how do you sprinkle the blood of the Passover lamb on the mercy seat?
Thank you. It's nothing I'm capable of doing. I mean, I'm capable of understanding it, but I'm not capable of doing
how
it.
How do you camp
and
out
after
with
all,
God
was really
Jerusalem?
Wanting us to understand him.
Yeah.
You know,
how in today's world do you bring a live lamb in your home 4 days earlier and in front of everybody slit its throat?
Yeah, you'd be arrested. You'd be arrested
for
animal cruelty. You would be.
Absolutely.
Know,
absolutely.
You know.
You
lay that out to them, and you say, you know, have you ever seen a fighter? I ask, have you ever seen, I'm a fight fan. Have you ever seen a fighter? You ever see two boxers come out? And have you ever observed a fight? Well, yeah. Well, so have I, but I'm not in the ring, but I can, you know, tell you what's going on.
Yeah. I can't tell you when a left hook works and when you should have left your right hand up so you didn't get smashed in the stars.
Right. Don't lead with your head like this guy did and walk into one.
Yeah.
You know,
been my point for a long time. But the destruction of the temple, which Yahweh explicitly allowed, ended the debate. It now became impossible, and Christians know this, by the way. They say, you know, you claim to be Torah observant, but you can't do, you know, most of what the Torah says because you no longer have a temple.
Yeah, don't
and
claim
so,
to do it. That's what
right. So
know.
If you're a doer, if you're focused on obeying a bunch of laws, they prevail with that argument. But if
well,
they can prevail with that argument, it means that God was sadistic in creating a plan that he did enable a way for us to live with him. And this is the very God that says the Torah is easy. You know, following the Torah's guidance is easy.
Yeah. You know, his words, I think you open up somewhere in Yada Yah where you're saying, you know, Yah was interested in us getting to know him, to learn about him,
mm-hmm.
and thus have a relationship with him. And that's the key. I mean, that's what his words are about. And that's the nature of religious material changes his nature. You know, when I tell people that the Torah is not law, and I show them, you know, all the breakdown on all the base words that create the word Torah, and then 6 months later, they're still saying, you'd better follow the law. I never speak to them again. I unfriend them. They're not getting it.
No.
They're almost hopelessly mired in religious trash. Personally, I'm at a point where I can't stand it. You know, why don't you learn?
Right. So here is a great example. Here's Dode. And we can't emphasize this enough. I'm going to use the vernacular. Amongst every human that has ever lived, the dude that God loved the most is Dode. This is God's favorite person of all time. And here's Dode saying that he seeks this inheritance, and that the reason that he is going to be allotted the share of his inheritance is because he has obeyed every aspect of the law. It doesn't say that, does it?
No.
No, it doesn't say that, does it?
He's observed it. He understands it. He gets it. Yeah, that's
right.
What he's saying.
And so if you needed, I don't need affirmation. You don't need affirmation. It doesn't hurt, though, to have affirmation. This is affirmation that the law-obey concept is erroneous. Dode, who never was very good at obeying, but was really good at observing, says, I allot me the share of an inheritance, which means I get all of the benefits of the covenant because I have committed to observing your word. Not obeying your law, observing your word. How does one observe words?
They read them. They read them. And
that's
consider.
The only way you can read. That is, by the way, that is the only way you can observe a word. You cannot observe a word by listening to it, by the way. That's the reason there's two words. There's shamar and shama, because, and God uses both, because you can't. You, there's only one way to observe a word, and that is to read it. It's so what he is saying here is limited to a single concept, reading Yahweh's word. Now, Dod has defined Yahweh's word. He uses a noun that where the noun says it's eduth, or ed for short, which is enduring witness and restoring testimony. So he'll equate Yahweh's word to his testimony. Not much of a difference there. And then he will use, I don't know if it's 50 times or more, but he'll use Torah as the definition of what Yahweh's words represent. And so he is telling us here that he's going to receive an inheritance because he is reading Yahweh's word. So that's a do, folks. But it's not an obey. Then he says, I seek the favor of your presence with all of my heart. Have mercy on me in accord with, consistent with, ka, in a manner like your word and promise, Imra. All right. Dod says there's two aspects of this whole thing here. First is, I get an inheritance. And, you know, and Dod's not looking for money. He had plenty of money. You know, this inheritance is not making the register ring. What he's looking for, what is the inheritance that we're being offered through the covenant? You know, eternal life,
well,
perfection, adoption,
not
yeah, enrichment, and power.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a single one of us that thinks that, okay, now that we're part of the covenant and God's children, we own the universe. That may be God's intent, but it never has even remotely crossed my mind. What I look at is an inheritance, is that it's Yahweh's universe, and we get to go explore it with him. That's the inheritance that I look at. I don't think there is a single shekel involved in our inheritance. And even if there were a shekel, what would you spend it on?
We wouldn't need them. What
would you go spend it on? What would you want that you didn't have?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I want a bigger
yeah.
pile of shekels than Larry has because, you know, I want to beat him to the beer truck.
That's easy.
So, I mean,
you know.
Okay, so anyway, he's saying that he wants the inheritance. But there's something else he wants. It's not just to receive all that God has to give. It's being in God's presence. And by the way, one without the other is not very good. You can be in God's presence and be judged, be a scumbag. You can be in God's presence as the malach are and have no rights. That's not a bad job, but it's certainly not a good one. Or you can receive an inheritance, but it could be from other than God, or have this grand inheritance but never get to spend any time with God. One without the other is not very good. Collectively, that's the purpose of the covenant. We get to be with God, and we get to receive all the benefits that he has to offer through his covenant. And so he says, I seek the favor, the benefit, and he had to use here a C word, so it's chalah. I desire the intercession, and I humbly request the positive outcome of your presence. Pene. Pene, by the way, is also happens to be the Hebrew word for face. You know, the Apple app of FaceTime. Pene is FaceTime. It's just that it's not electronic, and it just happens to be with the creator of the universe. It's a and it's not an Apple app, because the Apple, I guess, is what got him into trouble. But it is a benefit. It is an inheritance of the covenant, is that we receive FaceTime with Yahweh. And then he says, have mercy on me in accord with your word and your promise. So is Yahweh, Chanan, by the way, is the word here, another CH word, of course, and the Chet word.
Like Yahweh Conan.
Yeah, like Yahweh Conan, exactly. Yahweh is merciful. All right, so Paul writes that the Torah is incapable of making a person righteous and saving them. Dode says, have mercy on me, which would be favor, benefit, undeserved gift. Have mercy on me in accord with, ka, exactly as it is conveyed in your word. At the time that Dode wrote this, 1000 BCE, you know, there was no great Isaiah scroll. There was no Yirmiyah scroll. There was no Zechariah. There was no Malachi. There was no Hosea. But guess what there was?
There was Torah.
There was Torah. But, you know, I'm certain there must have also been the Gospels, right? No.
Yeah, sure. In Greek, no less.
Yeah, in Greek. Yeah, 1000 BCE, before the Greek Empire. So, Dode has figured it out, that the mercy that he is expecting is going to come according to Yahweh's word and promise. Imrah takes the place of Dabar. You know, Hebrew poetry, you say the same thing, you just use different words to say the same thing. And in this particular case, if you look at the last word, one you have Dabar, and the other you have Imrah. And most people, because English is a less effective language to communicate. I'm going to tell you, everybody's listening to this program and listening to me mutter in English. When we are able to converse effectively in Hebrew and we can think in Hebrew, our communication will be geometrically richer. Hebrew has many words with many unique shadings to convey every important aspect of relationships. English does not. In Hebrew, since relationships are based entirely on words, it is words that form the basis of every relationship. There are many Hebrew words for word. And while the primary Hebrew word for word is dabar, Dode is using a second Hebrew word for word here, imrah. So what do you think, Bubba J, is the likelihood that dabar and imrah have exactly the same connotation, and both of them can be equally communicated, effectively communicated, with the English word word?
It would be nil. Imrah's got different shades to it because it also includes answers, you know. Yeah.
Right. So imrah differentiates from dabar. Dabar means word, spoken or written. It speaks of a communication. Imrah is words which form a promise, words which convey an answer. So Dode is making a distinction. There's still Yahweh's words. There's still Yahweh's promise. There's still Yahweh's communication. But he recognizes that Yahweh's mercy is based on a very special group of Yahweh's words. And that would be his promise. This is another one of those things that is convoluted by Christians. And since so many of us have been Christians, I don't say this to show angst against Christians. I say this because as a former Christian, I'm trying constantly to cleanse myself of the religion. So, in this regard, Christians think to fulfill means to end. So when Yahushua said, I came to fulfill the Torah, they said, well, that means to end it. No.
Wow.
Fulfill is the answer to a promise. You can make a promise to someone, but that promise is only good if you fulfill your vow, you fulfill your obligation. And so fulfill is to promise. That when he was talking about fulfilling, he's speaking of Yahweh's Imra, his promises.
Yeah, it might be better to say, I came to keep my word, maybe if we were going to transfer.
I came to keep my word. I came to keep my promise. I made a promise, and I'm here fulfilling that promise. I borrow $1,000 from Larry, and I write a promissory note that I'm going to pay Larry back $1,000 plus interest in 1 year. In a year, I strike a check, and I hand it to Larry and here's $1,000 plus interest. I have honored my promise. I have fulfilled my promise. That's what fulfill means, and it's directly related to promise. Now, what are Yahweh's promises? Now, he's God. Does God have to make any promises? No. But he did. He promised to deliver the five benefits of the covenant for those who accept the five terms of the covenant.
That's right.
And those benefits of the covenant are all delivered through the seven Moed Mikre, particularly the first four. So the whole thing just fits together. You just have to connect the pieces. And it's very easy to understand what God is talking about and what he is offering. I consider the merit of, this is chasab, another CH word, I completely evaluated and accounted for my ways. And then I turned my feet and steps to God's witness and testimony. So what do you think he's saying here, Bubba J?
Well, I think that he decided, unlike religious people, he wasn't going to earn his way into Yahweh's good graces, if you will, himself with his own purity and his kind heart and his good deeds. He was just going to follow Yahweh's path. And
he recognized, Larry, that the same thing you and I have admitted often, that we're flawed. And that our way is not meritorious. That if God were just to analyze the condition of our hearts, we don't make the cut.
No.
And Dode is saying, he's writing songs to God.
He stood up to an entire army. You know,
yes.
I mean, he stood out there and fought a giant, basically, a guy,
yes.
You know what, 9 feet tall or something.
Right.
And
he pulled the kingdom of Israel together. He founded the city of Jerusalem.
And if his works weren't good enough, then wow, where
he's
did that
the
leave
founder
the rest
of the
us,
kingdom
Hero?
Of Israel. He is the one that built Jerusalem, and he accumulated all of the materials to build the temple. And he is the author of the most beautiful scripture in the whole of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Yeah.
And he's the smartest man who ever lived.
And he realized that he wasn't good enough. That wasn't about him. It was about accepting an invitation on a path. And then once people get that, they realize, I think I read in a book where a guy once was in college and he was used to 50-cent beer machines,
mm-hmm.
or something.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what they had. And
right.
He went out to an expensive dinner, and said, well, you know, in a restaurant.
Let me pick up pay and we pay the tab.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I put down my 50 cents.
Yeah.
The guy just laughed me out of the room.
Yeah, the guy said, don't embarrass yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And Dode here is more brilliant than just saying, okay, I considered my own merit, and so I recognize, all right, I don't really have enough merit to have earned this inheritance. I haven't earned admittance into God's company, so I better rely on God's merit.
Yeah, but you know how a religious person will twist those words? I just want to put it out there. They'll say, well, he was on a path of destruction, you know. He had done this and done that and done that. He was sinning, you know.
He was sinning.
Well, sure he was. But, you know.
But, by the way, he didn't say what I just said. He was much more clever than that. Clever in a positive way. What he said is, I considered the merit of my ways.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Yahweh has a way, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it isn't my way or your way or even Dode's way.
His way. It's Yahweh's way, right? So he frames this, I considered my way. We all have our own way. We all have our own approach. Every one of the religious zealots you talk to has their own little twist, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
How God's going to accept them because of this, that, and the other thing that they believe. Dode is saying, my ways don't work. There is only one way, and it's Yahweh's way, and you find Yahweh's way in his Edah, in his testimony. Now, that's half of it. The other half of it, he didn't say that I changed my mind, did he? He says, I turned my feet. Now, that sounds kind of awkward until you realize, isn't Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah a path?
Yes.
Isn't that the way to God?
That's the only path. It's the
Doesn't
only
God
one.
Tell us to walk to him and become perfect? Halak, walk to him and become perfect? Don't you walk on your feet?
That's right.
Yeah. So this is, it's just the nuances that I love about this man's inspired writings. The way he said it here puts you in a position that if you take the time to really think about what he's saying, you are left with a single possible way to interpret it. And that way happens to be wholly consistent with God's intended interpretation.
Just as in that first statement,
the only way you could interpret do was to read Yahweh's word. Here, the only possible interpretation is man has his way. Dode is saying, my ways, they don't cut the mustard. But in Yahweh's testimony, there is a way, and if I turn my feet to walk that way, then everything will be just fine. I'll inherit, I'll enter his presence.
Yet Dode had done great things. He had done great things, I mean, in the eyes of
great.
Man.
Great, yeah. You know, it's like the Sermon on the Mount, the end, where the Christians say, but didn't we do great things in your name? And if you get away from me, those of you who were Torahless, I do not know you.
Right.
Dode was not Torahless. He had done great things, really great things. I mean, about as great as you could possibly do. And he recognized that he could not earn his salvation on his way. He even recognized that with all the stuff that he's done, that his way wasn't going to cut the mustard. So what do you think our chances would be, Larry, if we were to try to say, hey, God, you know, we did some pretty good things. You know, Larry's got a good Facebook site, and you know, I've written a couple of books that aren't really accurate. I've had to rewrite them about 87,000 times to try to make them, you know, more accurate. But, hey, God, is that good enough for you?
Yeah, didn't I cut the mustard?
Oh, yes, it's like me plugging down a quarter on the bar and says, let me pay for that. You know, it's silly. All right, so that takes us to his next statement, and it is, I am coming quickly and without hesitation, reservation, or question to observe, to focus on, to consider, and to embrace the terms and conditions of your relationship agreement. All right, so he's figured out I got to turn a different direction. My feet's going to take me. Come on, feet, let's go in the right direction. Let's go in the way that Yahweh has articulated. And now he's saying, yeah, I think I'll bumble along. I'll take my time. I got other things to do. You know, there's the NASCAR race. I got some beers to drink. I'm not much of a hurry. We'll get to it when we get to it. Oh, what's Dode saying? I'm coming quickly, without hesitation. And why?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Because I want to observe your relationship agreement. What's he going to find along the way, the terms and conditions of the covenant? That's what he's going to find. Quickly, without hesitation. You know, one of the things that is remarkable about Dode is with all of his failings, he was passionate. He was no hesitation. I don't have much in common with Dode. I wish I had everything in common with him, but I sadly don't. But one of the things I have in common with him is, and I think, Larry, you have the same trait, there is no hesitation. There is no fear. There is no hesitation. There is instant desire to jump in and participate. If it's going to be something that we're going to do on behalf of Yahweh, I don't care who the foe is. I don't care what they have to say. I don't care how smart they are. I don't care how many of them. I don't even care what their approach is. Let me at them.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. You know, I don't have near the knowledge you have, but I figure I'll stand on the name and I'll stand on the Torah no matter what. It doesn't really matter what I know or I don't know. You know,
once you come to understand what you know is of lesser value. Once you understand who God is and what he's offering, we are both, all of us, are like Dode. I'm coming.
Again,
I was
very happy to know. I was ecstatic to learn that Yahweh was not in any way, shape, or form a religious deity. I was very happy about that. There are people that really dig their feet in. They're against that idea. And what I wanted to say earlier is when Dode's saying, you know, I realized my ways were not your ways, as you said, it's an effective counterfeit. What they will say that means is, instead of getting drunk on Saturday night, he was at church on Sunday morning. He understood God's ways, you know. That's how they want to turn it, like you're, in every facet of religion, you are earning your salvation, as they put it. I don't even like the word salvation.
Yeah, I don't either. You don't hear me use it very often. And it was the thing that is
empowerment.
I think empowerment is a really cool concept, and I like it a lot. One of the things that has been such a benefit of doing this study is coming to recognize that God's goal is not to save everyone. His goal is to form a family relationship and then to save his children. But even in saving his children, the saving part is of 1% interest. You know, the bigger parts are immortality, so we can be just like him. We can spend a lot of time together.
Have a relationship with
him. Being adopted, that's a big deal to him. Making us perfect so that we don't no longer have any failings. And enabling us then to be enriched and empowered by him, that's the part that he's focusing on. Salvation,
right.
While it's just...
I mean, that goes so far beyond...
Right.
Being
salvation.
Saved.
Salvation.
You know, I mean,
right.
It sounds like being saved to me sounds like, okay, I'm in the same situation I'm in today. I still need to eat. I still need to this.
The Christian will tell you, you know, when you're talking about the Torah and that you're not accepting the gospel of grace. And they say, but are you saved? And you almost want to just say, that's like a penny in Fort Knox. I mean, okay, that's like a dollar bill with Bill Gates. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
you don't
I'm
even
saved.
Have a part of the picture but, there, partner. That's why they're all worried about their bodies after they die.
Yeah, you're missing the big picture here.
Yeah.
Being empowered is cool. Being enriched is cool. Being adopted is cool. Being immortal is cool. Being perfect is cool.
Being
but
in the most perfect of circumstances. All these things matter.
What's really cool, we all get to spend eternity in Yahweh's presence as his kids.
Well, you're winners.
And explore the universe together. That's a billion times better than being saved.
Yeah, you're the ultimate winner. You're on the winning team. You were right all along. The truth was real. You know, you're there. You're real. You know, there's a lot to this. I mean, there's a million
things. There's a lot to it. It's extraordinarily simple and mind-bending in terms of how profound.
Yeah, it's totally profound. And it's beyond being saved. I mean, that
it's
lightweight being saved.
You know, when Dode says, I'm coming quickly without hesitation or reservation or question to observe and focus on it, to consider and to embrace the conditions of your relationship agreement. You know, that's not just the five requirements. He's also focusing on the five benefits. And if you really examine and you really consider the five terms, the five requirements of the covenant, what you find is that there really are 10 benefits to the covenant, because all five of the requirements are benefits. That's like saying you're required to eat this lovely meal in wonderful company. It's a requirement, but it is, I'm hosting it for you, I'm paying for it, I've invited you to it. But it's a requirement. You do need to show up. Okay, that's a heck of a burden for me. Let me think about that for a while. The destructive binding cords and disparaging pledges of the wicked who violate the standard, which surround me, cause me to testify as a witness, that your Torah shall not be ignored. It shall never be overlooked or forgotten. This begins with another Chet word, Chibel. This is Dode doing what you love to do, Larry.
Yeah, it is. I'm thinking that as we're reading it. He's in the middle of the fight, and that's fine. I'll do it all day long.
Yeah, and his answer is the same as your answer, which is probably why it's your answer. He says that those with the binding cords, the word religion, what is the word religion mean?
That means to bind.
Right. Binding cords.
Oh yeah, he's straight out saying it to him.
Right. It's the binding cords of ligament. That's religion. He said so. Yeah. The destructive binding cords. The destructive nature of religion. That's as close as there is in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to the word religion. He says.
Oh, it's so horrible.
Binding cords and disparaging pledges. The unfavorable demands and worthless guarantees of religion, of the wicked who violate the standard. The religious think that they're God's implements and they are in wholesale violation of the standard. I'm in violation of the standard too. But my words aren't in violation. My understanding's not in violation. My desire is not in violation. You know, I'm just not perfect. Their words are in violation.
They're total opposition. They want to smother the Torah. They want to destroy it with corruptions. They want to do everything they can do. Including
there's a huge difference between being in violation of, I am, because I'm not perfect, and being opposed to. I am not opposed to the Torah. I'm just not, I'm just not perfect by a smidgen. And those already acknowledge, okay, that he's not perfect part. But what he's saying is those people who are religious, they're in a wholesale violation of the Torah. And they're surrounding him. And they're surrounding us. They outnumber us 1,000,000 to 1. I mean, it's 1,000,000 to 1 they outnumber us. And so Dode says, hey, idiots. I want to tell you one thing. Yahweh's Torah is not to be ignored. Yahweh's Torah is not to be overlooked. Yahweh's Torah is not to be forgotten. If you are a Christian and you're reveling in your New Testament, God is saying his Torah is not to be forgotten. It's not to be annulled. It's not to be overlooked. If you want to take this line and compare it to Paul, Paul's a liar. I mean, it's as simple as it can be.
You know, well, to imagine a guy's letters could override Yahweh's words, or wow. It takes a pretty dense person, once you've shown them that, once you've shown them where it came from, to continue to hold on to it. But they are out there.
Once you quote Psalm 119:61 to a religious person, it ought to be over. If they're open-minded, it should be over. The destructive binding cords and disparaging religious pledges of the wicked who violate the standard which surround me cause me to testify as a witness that your Torah shall not be ignored, overlooked, forgotten, nor ever lose its significance.
You know, that's another thing I love about David. He absolutely hated religion, Doe did. And that, I love him for it. Yeah, he just hated it. He hated it.
Do you think that Doe came to all this on his own? Do you think he might have been inspired?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. I think he was inspired because he wanted to come to the truth. That's what
I
think.
Yeah, I do. By the way, I happen to agree. I think that the difference between, we study Yahweh's word and we want to come to the truth, but we are somewhat inspired in the sense that his words inspire us, and they inspire us to understand.
That's right. That's right.
In Doe's case, I think all of that is true, but I know in my case, while I am often inspired and I find Yahweh's testimony inspiring, my words are not inspired in the sense that Dode, everything Dode wrote, is precisely accurate all of the time throughout history.
Yeah, which is not the mark of a man. So,
right,
yeah, you're right.
Right, right. So that was really the point I was going to make here. So you recognize that you like Dode because he hated religion. Well, because his words were inspired by God. What does that say about
Yahweh? Religion. He absolutely hates religion on every level. Never once does he put it up. Never once does he support it. Never once is he behind the clerics. He's always in opposition to them. And yet, who do people run to when they want to get an interpretation or what, the Bible says, a book literally named after the sun goddess Biblia? What do they want? What do? They run to the clerics. The very people Yahweh said he hated. Right. What are they doing? You know, I mean, that should put an end to that argument, but it doesn't.
Dode is telling us that the antidote for Chabel or Chabal, the same three Hebrew letters, the Chet, the Beth, and the Lamed, and can be vocalized Chabel or Chabal. As Chabel and Chabal, it's destructive binding cords. Binding cord is religion. Disparaging pledges, which are really religious promises. Worthless guarantees.
He's describing religion here.
That's the worthless guarantees completely. is faith and hope in that which is unworthy. Possessive bonds. He's describing religion.
Yes.
And so the religion of the wicked who violate the standard, Rasha, which surround me, cause me to testify as a witness that your Torah shall not be overlooked. So what's the antidote to religion? The Torah.
The Torah.
When somebody acts religious, if you're going to follow Dode's example, what are you going to do?
You're going to attack that.
You're going to cite the Torah, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm
the answer is always the Torah. You know, I have people ask me questions all the time, and if they write me and ask me a question and they want to tell me all about their, you know, their personal experiences when they were Christian and all that kind of stuff, I've got nothing to say to them. I just really have nothing to say to them. If they want to write and say, you know, I have a question, what do you think about this, that, and the other thing? And the answer, if the question has merit, you know, if it's a question of who's going to win the Kentucky Derby this weekend, I'm not going to find it in the Torah a question of that many merit. If the question is, will we have a world war prior between two non-Israeli interested parties, between the United States and Russia, between now and the Magog War fought against Israel, I can't answer that question because it's not in the Torah, not material to our relationship with God. But if it's material to our relationship with God, the answer to every question is in the Torah. You'll find it there. And so it's also the antidote for religion. If you are in the Torah, this is, you know, how Dode began this, inheritance through Yahweh's word, into Yahweh's presence through his word. If you are focused on Yahweh's Torah, if you try to study and understand Yahweh's Torah, there is nothing religion can do to harm you. You are impervious from the stain of religion. That's the antidote.
Disparaging pledges and binding cords. Wow.
I know. I know. It's really a marvelous term. In the midst of this darkness, in the midst of religious darkness, I rise and stand up to deliberately express my thankfulness and to acknowledge to you that your means to resolve disputes and to achieve justice are honorable, fair, and vindicating. I have a vulnerability in my translations. And the vulnerability I have in my translations is I always study every word and all the roots of every word, and then once I have come to understand the words, I render the words in the manner that are most consistent with Yahweh's nature and plan. Now, an example of that would be mishpat. I could render mishpat as judgment. That's your judgment. And then tzedak, I could say, is righteous. And so I could have translated this and been consistent with all other English Bible translators and said, your judgment is righteous. I didn't. And I almost always translate mishpat as the means to resolve disputes, as the means to exercise good judgment, as the means to justly pronounce vindication. That's because that's what the roots of mishpat mean. Now, there are times when you see a juxtaposition of words that tells you that, oh, you got that one right, you know, the study was worthwhile. When mishpat is juxtaposed to tzedak, it means that that understanding of mishpat as the means to resolve disputes and to achieve justice is accurate, because the result of the mishpat in this statement is vindication. Tzedak is, I don't really like to translate tzedak righteous or righteousness because it has a religious connotation. The primary meaning of tzedak is to stand upright, and to stand upright because you have been vindicated, as opposed to bowing down because you're being judged and condemned. So tzedak expresses standing up, being right, being appropriate, being justified,
vindicated,
most important,
you know,
being vindicated. And so if you have a means to resolve disputes and it leads to vindication, pretty well affirms that rendering of those two words is right. So Well, I recognize that, you know, somebody could say, you're extrapolating there. You darn right I am.
Yeah, you're
that's exactly what I'm doing.
And trying to transpose the words as best you can into English language.
In context, and occasionally you run into something like this, Mishpat Tzedak. And you've just had Dode talk about how the remedy for religion, the antidote for religion is the Torah, and citing the Torah, and now he says the thing that lights up the darkness, that enables him to stand, be restored, and be established, it causes him to be thankful, is the Mishpat Tzedak, is the means that Yahweh has used to resolve the dispute and cause us to be vindicated. And you read that and say, oh, okay, you know, it was worth the study. There you have vindicated, if you will, that rendering of those words. So, you know, now if somebody wants to say, okay, you're extrapolating there, I said, yeah, but I went where the words led. Look, read Psalm 119:62, and you tell me how you can come to a different understanding of those words. I'm telling you for fact, my friends. Every time that Yahweh uses or inspires someone to use Mishpat, he's talking about the means that he has established to resolve the disputes that we would otherwise have if he had not established his Mishpat. And that the Mishpat exists to vindicate
us. And that is the Moed Mikra. I mean, that's what
that
they are.
That is correct. Which is why, guess what he's been talking about here? The path that he will...
Yeah, and the Moed,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And he's even referenced the terms and conditions of the covenant. Well, what is the second and... Well, why don't we talk all three? What's the first, second, and third term and condition of the covenant? Walk away from religion and politics, right? Walk away from Babylon.
Get out of Babylon.
Trust and rely on Yahweh. And number three, walk to me and become perfect.
Yeah.
The pieces fit together. It's a marvelous, consistent story. You know, this is we are listening to the words of the universe's greatest communicator as he inspired the smartest man in human history. Now, that's pretty cool, what we're being allowed to do.
Yeah, and you think about Dode. Just think about this part of Dode. He didn't have to listen to anything at that point. I mean,
no.
He had it all.
He didn't have to do anything.
You know, most people need a brick to fall on their head. They got to be down before they pay attention. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, he was literally king of the hill. He was king.
Of the hill. The hill was Mount Moriah. And he was king. He was king, the king of the hill.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, here's
and his
king
whole,
of
his
the
whole
hill.
Notion was about not even following his own path because he knew it was worthless. You know,
hey, so with that being the case, Larry, since he literally is the king of the hill.
That's right.
And he came to the conclusion that he needed to consistently observe the Torah. What does it say for the rest of us, mere mortals?
We might want to step in his shoes there and just do the same thing. It's not a big deal.
Right.
You know,
if it's good for him, maybe it's good for us.
Yeah, just promote it. Just promote it. I mean, that's embrace it, as you say. You embrace the Torah.
Right.
You know,
make it part of the fabric of your life and then share it.
I had a rabbi that just loved the notes I put out, and he said, why don't you wear the zitzits and grow the hair and the beard? And I said, I don't do that. I just don't do it. I said, the Torah is to be embraced. It's to be observed. It's to be understood. I can't work my way through this.
Yes. Give you a great example. When Yahweh said that he wants us to put his words between our eyes and he wants us to wear his word on our hands. Do you think that God was telling us to do what the black hats, the ultra-Orthodox Jews do throughout Israel, where they have this little box and they their phylacteries, and they have the and they have a couple of statements from the Torah in those little black boxes, which they put right between their eyes on their forehead, and then they have another little black box they wear on the back of their hand. You think
I'd say it's a stretch.
Doing that, God is just looking at you and he's saying, come on, you stupid moron. Can't you, I mean, I gave you a brain. Can't you think this through? If my words are between your eyes, then they're going to shape your perspective. You're going to frame every issue based upon my testimony. You're going to look at the world through the lens of the guidance that I have provided. You know, if my words are between your eyes, you're looking at them. You're observing them. You're reading them. That's the first part. And the hand in Hebrew spoke about what we do, our influence. It speaks of our power and our activity and our deeds. If Yahweh's words not only provide our frame of reference, our perspective, and that's when you come to understand what's being conveyed in the Torah, you have a frame of reference. And then if his words guide your hands, the things that you're going to do are going to be useful and productive.
Well, by the way, conversely, I think that is exactly, you know, the man of Torahlessness and this mark of the beast. I don't think it's a literal mark. I think it's what they're thinking about and what they're doing with their hands all day. That's my opinion of that. I don't think there's a literal mark. You know?
Yeah, in fact, we've got our resident, I can find anything, and I can find it probably faster than you can say it, Chuck, CGB, for those in the forum, having here Dabadim 6 and 7. And it reads that you shall impress them upon your children. He's talking about Yahweh's Torah teaching. And you shall speak them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. So is he saying that I want you to make your mattress out of the Torah? Is he saying that I want you to make your shoes out of the Torah?
No.
And he goes on to say, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be on the frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. When you write them on your doorposts, what does the doorpost symbolize? The doorway to life. The doorway to Yahweh's home.
If
the Torah is sitting there and you recognize the symbolism of the doorway and home and Torah, you recognize that the Torah frames the doorway to life and to Yahweh's home. It's all to help us understand and provide the proper perspective. And if you go instead to the mundane and wear the little box on your forehead on the back of your hand, God's just saying, come on, stupid. I mean, you got to be smarter than that. I mean, why would I want to spend my eternity with someone who interprets that as, okay, I'll put a little box on my forehead. I mean, God, come on. He's going to say.
Or doing the little bobblehead thing, walking to the wall, you know. I mean, that's
please. Please, what fun is this if you're not willing to think it through? I mean, the whole concept of eyes and perspective. You know, when you have perspective, it changes everything. You know, since I came to understand Yahweh through the Torah and embraced his covenant through the Torah, my perspective on everything has changed.
Oh, mine too. I mean, even when it comes to watching a movie and I see them selling valor and you know what I'm saying? This is all done intentionally.
Sure.
And I'm sitting there going, they got people, again, thinking they're honor and they're honorable and they're all this. And in this world, by this world's standards, maybe they are, and it means nothing. And it's sad. I mean, people are just fooled beyond belief. You know,
catch
about
this one.
Giving their... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, catch this one. I am a partner and a companion. living in close association, another CH word, Chabert. I have joined, I'm united, I'm close friends. Indeed, I'm family. With everyone who, as a result of the relationship, genuinely reveres and actually respects you. And of those who are transformed by carefully observing, closely examining, and thoughtfully considering your precepts, those instructions which you have entrusted to us, encouraging us to pay close attention to these directions so that we can respond appropriately to you. How does that resonate within you? Doesn't that just sing that all of us together here this evening, all around the world, we're family. We're companions. We're in a close association. And not just with this group, but with everyone who, as a result of this relationship, genuinely reveres and actually respects Yahweh. Those of us who have been transformed by observing His instructions for living, His precepts that enable us to respond appropriately.
And we will be the people openly condemned. You know that. I mean, always.
Yeah.
And that's
badge
what I love
honor.
About the family.
Yeah, badge of honor.
That's what it is. I mean, that's what I love about the family. You know, I love to see it when Ron Weiss is out there fighting with 50 of these religious boobs. He does it. You know, he's a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he goes.
So is Doe.
You know,
but what Doe is saying is there's a tender side to it, though, here, too. You know, he began there by saying, I'm fighting those who are religious. But he says, I'm in a tender embrace with all of those who really revere Yahweh and Yahweh's prescriptions for how we ought to respond to him. So there's a tender side, too. It's not all attack the religious with the Torah. There's also a tender side, a family relationship. Yeah,
well, no, it's
mercy.
Realizing that they're a family. Sure, of course, of course.
Yeah.
You're not at war with your family, of course.
Yeah.
I completely agree. And thoughtful consideration, by the way, when I go back and I look at the Pesach and Matzah instructions, in the end it says 7 days you shall not eat leavened bread. And that started at Pesach.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly why Yahusha, there was no leaven in him, you know,
right.
Or yeast. And
right.
And so there you go. It's 7 days. There's not eight. There's
yeah.
seven.
Yeah.
I'm convinced of that.
Your mercy, Yahweh, fills, satisfies, totally fulfills, covers the earth. Your clearly communicated prescriptions, your engraved thoughts regarding living, teach me everything I need and want to know. Works for me. Yahweh's mercy is not throttled by His Torah. Yahweh's ability to bestow favor on His children is not annulled. His mercy is eternal. It is sufficient. It covers everyone who embraces His prescription for living, who is nurtured by the engraved thoughts regarding how we are cut into this relationship. And they teach us everything we need to know. There's nothing that God hasn't answered that's important for us to know. Now that brings us to the end of our program. Larry, it's always a pleasure to share this with you. I think that at least I can tell you from my personal perspective, today was really uplifting. I am leaving this hour and a half much more invigorated than I was when I began it.
Me too. I was kind of beat when I started, so
yeah,
I'm up
now. I spent all day today in this chair and hot and humid here today, and finally, we sat down to do this, and right now I'm as light as a feather.
That's what the truth will do.
That's why I love it.
You talk about perspectives. and how they change. And I just want to throw that out, throw this out there. Once we came to realize, and of course you did a lot, you know, before me, you explained it to me, that the universe was 15 billion years old, which from Yahweh's perspective was, you know, a mere 6 days.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly,
from our perspective,
right.
Is 15 billion years. That changed everything. Now I could walk in reality. Do you understand what
right.
I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
It's Yahweh's words represent truth and reality. And sadly,
right.
because people think they have to twist them into these convoluted religious notions, reality goes away. You know?
Yeah, that's the release also of recognizing that we don't have to try to wrestle with Paul's words and make them fit the Torah. If you just reject Paul, you no longer are clinging to all sorts of things you're trying to twist to justify.
Yahweh's only screaming at you to do it, and it's not just through Chabawuk, but it's through a number
right.
of things, and especially
right.
saying that he hates religion. And we should really question all things that the religious present to us. I mean, really.
Right. Yeah, and the way you question it is you juxtapose what they say compared to what Yahweh said in his Torah. If they are in conflict, then you have a choice. It's one or the other.
Well, and they're almost always in conflict because you have to understand where their perspective of the Torah is wrong. Their perspective of the Torah is do's and don'ts and law, and you know it. And that's where, you know, we have to part company right there.
Yeah.
You know, because if they're not willing to, you know, understand that much, well, then, you know, they're just not going to get it.
But it all flows. If your perspective of God is a Lord with laws which need to be obeyed, it all fits the religious perspective.
Yeah,
Yahweh's actual perspective is he's a father with guidance to be learned from.
And he's an individual that cares. I mean, that to me means more. I have a hard time with father, I'll be honest with you, because I didn't have a good relationship with mine. All right, and I that word father, I don't use it like you do. I mean,
well, because I had such a good relationship with mine, I only had to had mine write me 150 letters threatening all manner of harm on me.
Like you were going to try to burn your house down.
Oh,
I mean,
and you know, it'd be a 3-page letter written in triplicate that would delineate everything that I failed at since I was 5 years old.
And I have to hand it to you to get around all that and
accomplish it. I had to get a restraining order against my father to retain my children and stay married. My wife says, "This man's crazy. I have a responsibility to our children, and unless you're going to get a restraining order, I'm going to take the children so they're out of harm's way."
That is such a bizarre story. They ought to put you on this ID TV thing.
And so,
it's too
weird.
You
want to talk about bad dads?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not suggest. Mine was just tough, but I mean, he was tough with everybody.
The reason it's easy for me to slide into dad mode with Yahweh. It's because he's the father I've always wanted.
Yeah, that may be. I just look at him as just the ultimate big brother, maybe, or, you know.
I do a lot, too. Yeah, I do a lot, too. You know. As friend, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any problem with the friend relationship, either.
No.
But
I
do.
My
preference is dad. I've got to tell you, my preference really is dad. I like the father-son relationship because I really wanted it, and with my sons, I have a pretty good dad relationship.
Yeah, I wish that I do have a very good relationship with my kids, other than on a Torah basis, because none of them will listen to it.
Yeah.
Even last night, I took my youngest daughter out to eat with her boyfriend, real nice guy. And I took him out to eat at a very nice place, and then afterwards I brought him in, and I was going to show him a couple things, and Haley's like, no, don't do that. I knew exactly what she was thinking. I was showing him something different,
right.
But she was so worried I was going to sit down and show Torah, you know.
Right.
It was just really I know. Bizarre. You know.
I know. It's and yet there's nothing more loving we could do.
I know. But they're not. They don't listen because my kids cannot separate Yahweh from religion.
Yeah,
they can't.
They're not religious, which is good.
No, they're not religious, and they don't want any part of religion. And yet, that they you know they have no clue how anti-religious Yahweh is. I mean, anybody, any thoughtful person has to know that macroevolution is nonsense. There is a creator. I mean, any thought, especially the heavy science background all my kids have.
Yes.
You would think that would be real elementary. It was elementary to me.
Right.
And I didn't have that solid science background, although I loved science, see.
Yeah.
But I said, there's just no way that this is true.
Same thing resonates with you that resonates with me is that the Genesis account, the Bereshit account, is so brilliant scientifically that once you have read it in the Hebrew and you consider what God said and the realization that it answers the unanswerable questions otherwise, it's the perfect answer to all of those questions. And
well, with line two saying Big Bang, sort of an interface.
There were times that both of us, though, were looking for reassurance. And if you're looking for reassurance, the opening chapters of Bereshit are profoundly reassuring.
They're absolute proof. You don't accidentally, you know, you lay it out how time rolls out like an economic half-life, and then everything in each epoch of time that he said he created on a given day is what shows up in the fossil record. You know, we can call Vegas and ask them what the odds on this are, but I can tell you they're infinitesimally small. It wouldn't accidentally happen that he would be 100% correct in that testimony.
You bring up a good point. You know, one of the things that I have a tendency to do, I don't know if this is true with you, but I know it's with me, is that there was a time in my life where that reinsurance was extraordinarily important to me, that there was a God and that I could trust that he inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. That was really important, that reinsurance. It isn't anymore. It hasn't been for a very long time. Because
right, but sometimes we forget.
But
sometimes
other people
we forget that we have to lay that out there for others.
Absolutely. So that's what I'm taking from this is that I need to be more aware that other people don't know him, and therefore we need to constantly share that reassurance, not for us.
I told you when I read that chapter, okay, and I reread that chapter several times. That's when I realized, for the first time in my life, this is all real.
This
is real. You know, I knew there was something seriously wrong with religion. I didn't realize how seriously Yahweh had laid out his words for me to understand what was going on, especially when you start getting into Mizmors where they're talking about relativity and time calibration based on your point in the universe. And I just say, wow, you know, made my head spin. And it was a
and you are a and you're a rebellious guy.
Real.
You're a fighter.
Oh, I'm totally.
You're
rebellious.
A tough dude. And so for it to resonate with you as a fighter, as a rebellious guy, as a tough dude, tells you a lot about God's style, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's rebellious in that way. I mean, he's rebellious against it. Well, he's condemning of everything in the world I'm rebellious against.
Right.
And
I look
and
at
I'm
God. I've always enjoyed the part of Yahusha that is the antithesis of how he's conveyed in Christianity. He's a man's man. I mean, he wasn't a carpenter. He didn't work with wood. He was a stonemason. You know? He didn't ride his Ferrari to work and take the elevator. I mean, he walked the walk. He was tough,
well,
dude.
He went out and he got the fishermen. And
fishermen. Hanging out with the guys, sleeping out underneath the trees. He was a tough dude, and he took no nonsense. I mean, you come at him with some riddle, and he was right in your face.
Yeah, he shot you a riddle right back, didn't he?
Woo.
And buried you in it. Yeah,
man's man. Man's
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I'm just... Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's, and see, and,
yeah.
And again, that's the antithesis of the ways portrayed in religion. Sort of this,
right. This
sissified, depressed character
right.
that walks
man's
around.
Man's man. And I don't want to shortchange women here because, while many women, like,
a lot of women like a man's man.
Like strong men. And, and Yoshe and Yahweh come across as strong. Man's man. I mean, strong, all male characteristics. But there's also the set-apart spirit that has all of those softer sides. Now,
but doesn't every man's man have that side? That's the whole thing.
I think so. If a man's
touch, I know that.
Right, if you can't fully be a man and not have a soft touch.
Yeah, you can't
exactly.
be. You know, otherwise you're just a bully. I disrespect that. I have no respect for a bully.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've used my words a lot more than I've ever used fists. I mean, I really have used words.
Yeah.
I stood in the middle of a dozen guys and talked them down. I really.
Yeah.
And it was my words.
I've done it with guns pointed between my eyes.
Yeah, I know. I haven't done that, but that's pretty strong. That's very strong.
But part of that, it was probably foolishness early on in my life, and then later on in my life, it became trust.
Yeah, but don't you think? And here's what I think. Yahweh does not live in time. He doesn't, and he knows who he knows. You know, that's why he said to Yirmiyahu, what did he say to him? I knew you when you were in the womb, your mother's womb.
Right.
Because it's not because he made Yirmiyahu become who Yirmiyahu was.
Nope.
It's because Yirmiyahu, like Dod, walked that path. And Yahweh knows that. So whether you had come to a complete evolution of the truth or not, Yahweh already knew you.
Yeah. And,
don't you think?
Absolutely. I think God plays favorites in this way. You look at Moshe. When Yahweh had to introduce himself to Moshe, did Moshe know his name?
No.
No, he had to ask his name, didn't he? Did Moshe know the Torah? No, it hadn't been revealed to him.
Yeah,
and
but
so,
yet Yahweh
did he know the terms
Moshe
and conditions of the covenant? Absolutely not.
That.
But
yeah.
Yahweh knew that ultimately he would come to know all of these things, and he reached out to him because he had a characteristic. He had characteristics that God wanted to work through. And
well, you said something earlier about Abraham and how we may have a big advantage.
I think we do.
You know, I think a lot of people aren't willing to think about it in that way. Because there were certainly millions of people, but there was only one that really accepted the offer.
Correct. Oh, that's absolutely.
You know, I'm sure they all had an offer.
And when he accepted the offer, he hadn't accepted all of the terms and conditions of the covenant. He wasn't saved. Not then, but God still communicated to him. So is it possible for Yahweh, and I get this all the time, to communicate with somebody that doesn't know him? Absolutely. But he's not going to do it unless one or two things are true. Unless it's somebody who he knows, because he's not constrained in time, is going to get to know him. And so he's initiating the contact, which is his prerogative. He's initiating the contact. His prerogative.
He already knows us. He already knows whoever it is that's going to make it down that path or walk on
it. Larry, I want to go one step further.
Yeah.
Would you or I have come to know him if he didn't initiate a first contact? I don't know. He can pick favorites if he wants to. If he says, this is a personality that I want to spend time with, Why can't God say, make first contact? It's still our choice. It's just like, you know, you go up to a pretty girl and say, hello, my name's Larry. I'd like to get to know you. It's not usurping free will. But I think God can and does make first contact with personalities that he's interested in getting to know.
Yeah, that point, and I also think that it's got something to do with an acceptance, too, of the truth. I mean, he is looking for people that are real. I mean,
oh, of course. You've got to be real. Got to be willing to. Now, I don't think he's going to work with somebody that he doesn't know in advance after he makes first contact is going to work their way to him. By work their way to him, I mean observe. Be open.
Well, he's certainly not going to compromise. So, it's my way or the highway type of situation. And I get that. And I'm glad, by the way, because everybody else out there thinks that they're going to live a life. We hear these things of she lived a dedicated life and she dedicated or he dedicated his life to whatever. I don't care what it is, retarded children, or to make sure abused women were taken care of, or, you know, all these things that may sound wonderful, but in the end, they're really nothing but just another failed human institution. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Ultimately,
if you want to do something with God, and say, if you want God to actually engage in your life, and work with you, work through you, make your life something that he is interested in, then there's only one way to do that. Be interested in the things that he's interested in. That's really it.
Well,
if you're
interested
in his Torah and sharing his Torah, he's going to be interested in you. He's going to work through you.
Yeah.
If you're not, you're not.
Yeah, and his main interest is relationship. That's what it's about.
Right.
It's about sharing words so that other people can have that option to have that relationship, which is what you do and what I try to do. I mean, it's just what we do what little we can, and I mean, I do a little, you know, and that's about what I got. But it's not, that's what we can do, and at least we can make our mark in life of something positive. Because there is not another straight game in town. It's just nobody's willing to admit that.
And I know that's really the ultimate thing is there's no other straight game in town. This is the only straight game there is. Straight game means that the dice aren't loaded, the cards aren't marked. This is a straight game. This is I'm telling you the rules. I'm committing to the rules. If you play by the rules here on this game, this is what you win. It's a straight game.
Yeah, well, it's huge. It's huge.
Yeah, we're not trying to be demeaning to Yahweh by calling the terms and conditions of his covenant a game. You know, it's life and death. We know that, but the concept of a straight game is still profound. It's a straight game. The cards aren't marked. The deck isn't loaded. The dice aren't loaded. It's a level playing field. These are the rules of the game. If you play by the rules, you will win, guaranteed.
Yeah, you know, and yet there's so much that works against us, and I mean, so much things like, so why is it that these writings are correct and Buddha isn't? You know, I mean, they go from the mundane that
right.
way to I don't really want to hear about it. I don't want to know about religion, or I hold on to my religion. There's so many ways to get lost. There's so many ways to get off the path.
The answer on Buddha is that it doesn't matter. Buddha only gave people a way to live a painless life, whether he's right or whether Buddha's wrong is irrelevant to whether Yahweh is right.
Yeah, he's just a philosopher, really.
Right. Now, if you're dealing with Paul, then you have to choose one or the other. If you're dealing with Akiba, you have to choose one or the other. You know how Akiba died, by the way?
No, I don't.
He was flailed alive.
Really?
Flailed alive. Yep.
And who did that?
of the Romans.
Yeah. So it didn't work out that well for him.
Hmm. No, it didn't. No, it didn't. That false Messiah thing, it's a really bad idea.
It shouldn't surprise me. I guess that's exactly what they would do to somebody, leading an uprising.
Do not go. Just as a hint, do not go with that false Messiah thing. It really is a really bad idea. It doesn't work. You're talking about the last, when Hadrian completely destroyed Israel, is that God really didn't have a dog in that fight.
Not at that point, he didn't.
No, he didn't have a dog in that fight. It was Hadrian could do whatever he wanted to do. God really didn't care.
Should have put a stop to rabbinic Judaism, and if that didn't, certainly all the other injustices.
Can you imagine the father of rabbinic Judaism is the guy that announced, said, hey, man, I've got such a pipeline to truth. I'm saying that this warlord is the Messiah, and he turns out to be a complete fraud, and you lose your land. Most Jews lost their life, and those that didn't lose their life were exported as slaves. And you're going to trust him to be the founder of your religion? I mean, to be a religious Jew based upon Akiba, you've got to be absolutely out of your ever-loving mind.
You do.
That's the basis of it. You know, Akiba's the foundation of rabbinic Judaism.
It's a hard thing for me to understand, any more than it is for me to understand. Why would you accept letters that another man put in a book in order to call the creator of the universe, his words, no longer in vogue? I want you to think about this. Why do you think he chose those particular letters? If you can't give enough thought to understand that the creator's words are important and that a man's words really aren't that important, you probably deserve Barack Obama as your president.
Oh, of course.
You deserve not to walk into any straight game in town. I'm glad I'm not in your position. That's what I would tell them.
Yeah. All right, Larry. Well, I'm going to go and get some dinner. My pleasure as always. This was really a fun exchange today, and we stayed pretty focused on the psalm. We covered an entire stanza.
You did anyway. Yes, you did. I was enjoying it really good.
Yeah.
So you have a good night and a good
you
seventh
too.
To you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Best to you, and thanks to you for participating in Shattering Myths. I always love it when you call.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.